Raving Lunatic Studios, The Malady Group, a hastily assembled, unrehearsed podcast debunking the craziest conspiracy theories of the day, with Mike Barra, David Hatcher Childress, and returning kook conspiracist Mike Schadenfreude. Now here's the moderator, Rage Master. Welcome back. Before we begin, let me remind our audience that Bigfoot is not an alien. The main issue tonight, the 1969 lunar landing was fake. Issue one, it's fake because it would have been too dangerous for the astronauts to leave Earth orbit. Mike Barra.
Basically, it's impossible to survive the levels of radiation outside the Van Halen belt.
Wrong! The level of radiation in space is equal to a CAT scan and could be blocked easily by the command module. And it's called the Van Allen belt. Issue two, NASA photography of the moon is impossible and was done in a studio. David Hunter Childress.
It's impossible for shadows to cast that way. In regular photos, shadows diverge, so you have to ask.
Wrong! Shadows will not diverge on the moon, but run parallel. Issue three, the astronauts were ill-prepared for the mission. Mike Schadenfreude!
Neil Armstrong crashed the lunar module in testing. He was practicing. How could he have nailed it on the moon? It is
wrong! Easy. That video was one example of dozens, and the cause of the crash was not Armstrong, but other engineers. Issue four, the moon had no stars in the photography. Mike Barra!
When you look at the surface of the moon, there aren't stars, and you can't see them from the moon. How can you do that? It's impossible.
Wrong! The moon reflected too much light to show stars. The exposure time for the camera was too short, in which case nothing else would have shown up on the image. Issue six, the landing was filmed by Kubrick and a film studio. David Hunter Childress!
Kubrick did a great job in 2001 recreating the lunar surface, and therefore we have to ask if...
Wrong! Kubrick's special effects director attests that Kubrick and NASA did not collaborate, and the technology was not adequate to recreate a lunar landing. Issue 7. The Soviets were too far ahead. Shut it, Vernon!
Well, after Sputnik, the Soviets got way too far ahead of NASA with all that Nazi spy stuff, and they had
to leave. They were not that far ahead in their efforts to get ahead of our major. Final issue. How do we stop this show?
I think you're not being nice, and we should be...
Wrong! All three of you are worthy of the greatest of derision. So, bye-bye.
Sci-Fi Malady. Symptom 152. The moon landing was fake! If you have comments, you can leave them at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com, or you can hit our defunct Instagram at ravinglunaticmedia, or you can hit us up on Twitter that I don't use at Sci-Fi Malady, or... I mean, yeah, let's just end the show. Rage Master, what's left for them to do? Because there's really nothing left to podcast about after that. I think we hit it all right there in the intro.
Yeah, I guess I kind of blew it, didn't I? Oh, well, you know what? No, we'll go into detail here. But you know what? Before we do that, I'm going to level with you two. So, Sickies, Scott gave us, since this is Scott's topic. Baby. Yeah. He gave us the shows to watch to this week. There were a couple sets. There was one from the Science Channel about the truth about the moon landing. And before that, there was another one from clearly the 80s called, what was it called?
What Really Happened on the Moon. It's like a 3-hour and 30-minute attempt to show you the moon landing is faked.
And I couldn't do it. I didn't make it through it. I skipped because my biggest problem with conspiracy theorists, aside from the lies and the fact that they just keep changing the benchmark, no matter what you do to disprove them, they just change the benchmark so they can't be wrong or they call it the official story, is that they go into such nitty-gritty details or overly complex plots. Look at anything from the Epoch Times. They will have a flow chart about Obamagate that's just like, wow, the janitor at the White House was in on it somehow. And it's unbelievable. Or like Scott, you did the Kennedy assassination. It reminded me of when I was a kid, there was a documentary about it. And they were going into pictures about the hairs on his head and how they should look after a certain kind of wound. And it's like, that's what these people do.
Yeah.
They down and put a magnifying glass up to a picture and they find that one little blurb that's just slightly off for some reason because the guy who handed it smudged it after spilling coffee on it, but it didn't really change the image. It just smudged it. But nope, there it is, proof positive. And when I was going through like the photographic part of that documentary, they were just going on and on and on about the most small technical detail that's like, my God, did you guys just sit here? It's like they just sat down with the photos and they must have been sitting at it for hours. It reminds me of the time when Gary Gygax and Tim Kask of TSR, after a kid went missing and the police, James Dallas Expert III went missing, and that private detective that was hired to find him was assuming that the kid was stuck in the steam tunnels. So they sent him a picture of his cork board with thumbtacks in it so they can interpret the positions of where those thumbtacks are and find where he's hidden. And they stared at it for 8 hours because the police told them to. Of course, they found nothing because they were reasonable human beings. But that's just my point. After getting through the photo part, I threw my hands in the air and said, I'm done. I can't. The news guy's like, oh, reasonable and intelligent people are starting to accept this. No, we're not. Well, we are not looking at this.
This is the other issue I have with most of this. Is these guys are not experts in the field that they're speaking on. Photography. None of these guys are experts in photography. I'm sorry. Why are stars not showing up? It's obvious if you know anything about photography why they're not showing up.
Well, they did have a photography expert, but the problem is it's not like they invited on another photography expert to go, wait a minute. No, there was just the one guy, a guy from Kodak, and then the physicist that looks like he fell off the lower end of the Charles Darwin's chart of development.
Oh, wow.
I got to confess, I didn't get all the way through that one either. I started tuning out in the second half of it when they started showing me clips from movies. And it was in the late 90s or early 2000s because they referenced Apollo 13 in the movie. So, but when they're sitting there saying, are these scenes in the movie a whistleblower leaving an earmark for us to find? And then one of them was that in Apollo 13, right before the massive malfunction that made them move to the Aquarius, they played the theme song to 2001 A Space Odyssey, and then they went into the dawning of the age of Aquarius with the moon in the seventh house. And supposedly, that was the astronauts sending a sign to everybody that it was staged and fake, and that Apollo 13 was even staged and fake.
And that's the problem. They sit down and their feverish little brains concoct the most inane, overly complex and complicated with 2,000 moving parts conspiracy. And it's just like your JFK thing, Scott, that you did the quick rants about. And Sickies, by the way, if you have not heard his quick rants about the JFK assassination, I urge you to. It's not quick. It's
like 30-some minutes.
But it basically covers everything, especially the photos, how people are just looking at smudges on a camera and they're colorizing a picture, a smudge, to look like a police officer that they swear is a Corsican hitman.
Lucien Sarti.
But that's what it is, because I found this pixel smudge and was able to colorize it properly, and that's what I want to see, so that's what it is.
Oh, joy, my neighbor's lawn care service chose today to show up and mow the lawn.
Well, great. They're trying to silence.
They don't want us to talk about the moon landing. It's a conspiracy.
They're trying to shut us down, man.
Our conspiracy theorists are making a conspiracy to shut our anti-conspiracy theory down, man.
They're trying to shut us down, Nation. We need your support now. Buy my super cream that kills COVID.
It's only found in blueberries and supernovas.
They sent their lawnmower men to act against us. Send your lawnmowers. I will not be silenced by your lawnmowers. This thing, I mean, like, I gotta say, this conspiracy, and we'll get into the actual outlying of the conspiracy, but I think you all know what it is, that we didn't land on the moon and that the videos were faked in a Hollywood soundstage, and that all of the photos of the moon were professionally done and faked as well in a recreated environment.
Which fits science fiction, because the conspiracy theory is science fiction. Yep.
But I am offended by this conspiracy more than anything. More than the Kennedy assassination, more than the flat earthers, more than the fact that we went to the moon and aliens told us to go home, more than Bigfoot being a transdimensional alien or the Loch Ness Monster being a plesiosaur that's trapped in the lake somehow and maintained a breeding population, but we never found them.
But that's just funny, that's why.
Yeah. This one, however, just offends me more than anything because putting men on the moon is the greatest technological accomplishment that mankind has ever done. And when you say it didn't happen, you are demeaning and reducing all of mankind. It is the greatest thing achieved technologically in the history of the human race and in the history of this planet. Not one thing we've done technologically has been as hard as what these guys did. And they did it with, as everybody has said over and over again, less computing power than the computers that you played Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego on in school. They sent three men to the moon. Two of them walked on the moon in 1969 in basically a tin can strapped to a giant rocket. They didn't know what the damage of the Van Allen radiation belt was going to be. They hoped, they guessed, they took the risk. They didn't know what other radiation they might encounter in space, or if there would be an untimely solar flare or a gamma ray burst. Well, I think they were, you know, gamma ray bursts were all dead anyway. But at any rate, they didn't know. They didn't know what was going to happen when they landed on the moon. They had the alternate speech written. I mean, if this thing was really, you know what, I just thought of this. If this freaking thing was really done in a soundstage, why is there the alternate speech for the president to give in case they all died?
Well, and here's my question, too. If this was done on a soundstage and all, how can the conspiracy theorists haven't gone looking for that equipment? So the burden of proof is on NASA to prove that the original magnetic strips are around. But how come the burden of proof isn't on you to find the magnetic strips and the equipment that was used on the sound studio?
Exactly.
Well, here's a butter one. Why didn't the Soviets just say it didn't happen?
Right. Oh, right. That's the biggest. To me, that's the biggest smoking gun. Yeah. If anybody would have wanted to lie about it, it would have been them.
Yeah. Then it came right out and said, no, this didn't happen. You know how we know it didn't happen? We had our own lunar satellite in orbit on the other side to crash into a mountain, but before it did, it gave us telemetry that they weren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but no, they admitted they never, ever, ever went, this didn't happen. They just went,
yeah.
Okay, move on.
Yep.
You think it was coincidence that the Soviets were trying to land their own lunar lander slash orbiter 3 days before the United States got there so they could claim some victory being the first nation to put something on the moon?
And as soon as we landed, the Soviets suddenly stopped trying. Makes it very suspicious.
Yep.
I mean, this one bothers me, though, because you demean all of humankind by saying this. And it's the same way it bothers me when they say that the Great Pyramids had to be built by aliens, or that these great accomplishments that our societies of antiquity did couldn't have been done by us. We can do great things. Putting a man on the moon is an example of mankind focusing on something and accomplishing something. And maybe some people will say, what did we gain by the $30 billion we spent to go to the moon? You know, I can go into that one, but the fact of the matter is you chose a goal, you pushed the bounds of human ingenuity, you learned things in that process, and you showed that nothing is out of our reach if we are committed enough to do it. But then you've got these people who just go, no, we didn't do that. It's not possible we did that. So we faked it and made everybody believe that we did. And beyond that, then you take away the sacrifices of the people who did die. And if you ever want to just be chilled out for a couple of weeks, go listen to the audio from the fire that burned up the three astronauts in the capsule and the testing. You won't sleep well for weeks because it is one of the most horrifically chilling things. I still hear it in my head. I wish I never listened to it. And
that was a terrible thing.
When you say this didn't happen, you take that sacrifice away. You take that sacrifice away. Well, sickies, we may be hitting too close to the mark because what you don't know is that this is a continuation of the podcast that cuts off abruptly at about 1448 minutes from yesterday, 24 hours later, because my computer was completely struck, lame, shall we say, inoperable, became a paperweight out of nowhere. I've never seen the computer do this before, never had it happen. At 6:01 p.m. on June 6th, my computer stopped working. We kept recording for another 10 minutes before I realized that the computer had frozen, and we lost about 45 minutes of the podcast yesterday that is just gone. The computer froze up so much so that the clock stopped working. The keyboard stopped working. Nothing could work. I couldn't control alt delete. I couldn't control alt escape. The only thing left was the good old, I'd say the three finger salute, but that didn't even work. So I just had to hold down the power button until it shut off. No backup was saved to Adobe Cloud, which should have been done. The computer was able to recover everything except for the 45 minutes of missing podcast. So they must have came in and tried to silence us. And by they, I mean the moon landing conspiracy people. They came in and tried to silence us. But we won't be silenced. We are still here, right, Thomas?
Absolutely. We are still here. We will not be stopped. Grave people, we are here broadcasting and letting you know the truth.
They're trying to shut us down, Nation. They're on to us. We need your support now more than ever. They're trying to shut us down. They're putting stuff in the water to make you believe their conspiracies. It's a globalist conspiracy theory agenda in conjunction with the flat earth people to make you believe in the lizard people. They're trying to shut us down, Nation. They're trying to shut us down. We need you now more than ever. We need your support more than ever. Buy my garbage that doesn't work. Buy it. This is a supplement that will make you crap a lot, but it's not going to do anything that I say it's going to do, but it's going to make you smarter. It's going to add 37% IQ overnight. Buy it. It's a mixture of mercury, lead, and silver dust suspended in a protein formula.
And not approved by the FDA for some odd reason.
It will either make you 37% smarter or it will kill you on the third dose. Either way, you're never getting your money back. So where were we? I think I had just finished being all indignant about the fact that saying that we never landed on the moon diminishes the greatest accomplishment that mankind has ever made in a technological sense and the people who lost their lives to get there. And I think that's where we left off yesterday.
Yeah, I had just started in on what really upsets me about conspiracy theorists in general, beyond just false witness and testimony, if you want to take it to a theological level, but we could just keep it out of that if you wish. The fact that there's two main problems. One, there is no amount of solid evidence which will convince them, ever. It will always be considered the official story, therefore cannot be trusted. Well, and if you try to give them solid evidence, they use technique number two. So technique number one is deny evidence and call it the official story. But what if somehow you actually managed to win them over? Like we see with Mike Barra in that space show. Well, then they decide to chance for the benchmark. So you shut them down here, and then they just go, oh, well, that doesn't matter because you don't address this. Exactly. They decide that, okay, well, I can't use the official story lingo because some independent person I agree with went with it. So I'm just going to change the benchmark. But the problem is then you change the benchmark. Then what happens when you get someone else who's like an expert in the field? Well, they never really debate an expert in the field. Now, do they? Because what happened? Because what happens then is they'll fart as Scott just did. They will essentially decide that it's easier to just not debate an expert, change the benchmark, and call everything else the official story. It's the equivalent of plugging your...
Okay, I'll stop with the sound effects. I don't know why I'm just obsessed with them right now.
Thanks, Ron Burgundy. So It's the equivalent of plugging their ears and going, la, 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 I don't believe you, la, 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 la. And that's the biggest problem I have with conspiracy theories. And it's infectious because other people see this, and even maybe they don't agree with them on the moon landing thing, but they take that attitude and apply it to something else in life and decide, well, if they can do it, so can I.
So wait, Rage Master, were you on the moon in 1969? Were you there personally to see Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin get out of the lander and walk on the moon? Were you there? Have you ever been there to see the American flag and to see the stuff left there? Have you been there?
Yes. Prove that I wasn't.
No. Prove that you were.
Prove that I wasn't.
You're screwing up my argument, Rage Master.
You're not allowed to put the onus on me that I have to prove myself, but you never have to prove yourself. Prove that I wasn't. Start with you. Prove that I wasn't there, and then I'll prove that you're wrong.
Were you there to observe your own birth?
Yes.
Yeah, can you remember it? Yes, I mean, you can't even prove that you're real. You're not real, Rage Master. Nobody other than your parents and the doctor who delivered you saw that you were born. So how do I know it really didn't happen and you're not a conspiracy?
How do you know I wasn't?
Oh, wow. Wait, mind blown. How do I know I'm real? I'm a conspiracy.
Exactly.
And that's you're a conspiracy. I'm a
Let me just add that to it then. That's the other thing. They'll always want proof for their theory, but then, oh, I don't have to give proof for my theory. I've given you what I think is right. I don't need it to be validated. I'm right. You have the official story. Therefore, I'm right. I don't have to prove myself. You do.
I always love that. And they'll just be like, could it be that this is not what mainstream science says it is? Mainstream science says that if I drop a hammer, it will fall to the ground because of gravity. But could it be that an invisible person simply grabs it out of my hand as it's floating and throws it to the ground?
Oh, dear.
How's it mainstream science? All right. Do we want to go back through? Let's start it up again. Let's go back through the tenets of the conspiracy theory and why they are wrong. And I think we start with the fact that the combination of the United States and NASA were not ready to go to the moon in 1969, and that the Soviet Union was just way, way too far ahead. And I think we can start that one with the fact that I think the argument that they love to say the most is Neil Armstrong couldn't successfully fly the lunar lander in Earth atmosphere. And since it crashed and he had to eject in Earth during test flights, that there's no way he could have landed in on the moon.
You know, I like this one in that space show, in the fact that not only did they take the guy to the lunar lander, but they brought out an engineer who was there who designed the practice vehicle, and then pointed out, you know, that was only like one of like 20 goes at it. And as a matter of fact, the mistake was not his fault. It was some other engineer who should have been paying attention and wasn't. So really, it wasn't his fault at all. And then all of a sudden, how crestfallen Mike Barra looked when he found out that wasn't the only one. You think that was the only time he went up in a simulator? How many flight hours do you think that a pilot has to have? And not only that, I texted this to you guys. Oh, so one mistake and one crash means it's impossible for him to have ever succeeded again. Wow, I guess the Wright brothers never flew in Kitty Hawk. Or you know what? I guess I failed a math test. That means I could never possibly pass another math test again.
I just like that. It's like, you know, Neil, we put you in the LEM simulator and you blew it up and had to eject. Would you like to try it again before we go to the moon? No, I'm good. Let's go. I got it this time. I learned from my mistakes. I'll put that thing right down in the Sea of Tranquility. No worries whatsoever. I don't need to do this again. Let's go.
Well, not to mention him almost, you know, crashing and dying actually helped him with the real thing.
Right.
Because he actually was able to do a maneuver that he wasn't supposed to have to do.
Exactly. Well, and for that matter, too, Neil Armstrong was a test pilot, And he'd had gone on with the Gemini, I think, where things went really awry and he was able to get the vessel back in control. And so you're telling me, let's just go to the pilot, a test pilot testing airplanes, which they will not debate, a conspiracy theory will not debate. So you're telling me that a test pilot having a mishap or crash landing means the plane doesn't exist? And then that pilot never flew again?
Yes.
I see. Absolutely. Okay. Solid logic. I can't go against that one.
You're absolutely right. If test flight crashes is premise A, and premise B is if that happens, no further development is done. Airplanes are a conspiracy. They do not exist. It's an optical illusion. And if you've ever flown on one, you've just been drugged to think you flew on one while you were taken across the country in a train.
Well, hey, trains. Trains crashed when they...
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
Wheels. Wheels are a conspiracy.
Yeah. People trip and fall all the time.
Flint and steel.
How are you walking?
Flint arrows. I mean, come on. All that stuff. It's all a conspiracy.
Yeah. There's no way those things could exist.
We're all still living in caves.
It's the Matrix.
Yep. Ah.
We're in Plato's cave.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's all a world of foams.
So, no, that one was a weak, really, really weak argument. That's a new one I've heard. That's a new one I've heard that I thought, wow. So he had a misstep while training, and that means that conclusively he couldn't have done it.
Yep. And it's an interesting one.
You've never learned from a mistake, I see.
That's okay, conspiracy theorist logic. And that's one, as we go through these things in the 60s that were mishaps, that's part of it, that they think that we just never could have learned from them and we would have stopped. The next one is the Apollo 1 fire. And the fact that Gus Grissom had hung a sign that said it was a lemon right before he, you know, tragically died in the Apollo 1 fire. And the fact that they say that we were so not ready to go to space that it wasn't, that we couldn't even safely get the astronauts in and out of the capsule on the ground, meant that we could have never got Apollo 11 where it needed to go.
Again, this is nonsense because... Let me use an example from just my workplace. So where I work, I teach English language to international students. And originally we were part of a smaller program that got enveloped into a community college. And initially you had a lot of moving parts coming together, whereas in the county you had a lot of separate programs. Now they all came together as one. The point I'm getting at is, in that first year, there were a lot of bumps. There were a lot of mishaps. There were a lot of missteps, mistakes, and clunk. Why? We just jammed a bunch of disparate programs together, and really there's no cohesive method just yet. So therefore, because the beginning year was bad, that's it. There's no way we could have improved. This goes back to the first argument. There's no way we could have improved. It's impossible. No way we could have learned from our mistakes and figured it out. Well, Mike Barra and you other tinfoil hatters, I'm sorry to tell you, plight of humanity that you are, that we got better. We improved. We learned from our mistakes, and we have a well-oiled machine now. And this is the same for technology or anything. Thomas, you mentioned train crashes. Yeah, early train models sometimes crashed. That doesn't mean you go, well, there's no way we're ever going to figure this out. No, you find out what went wrong and you learn from that.
Yeah. And you know, this is the thing. NASA was constantly learning in the 60s. And, you know, one of the things that is brought up by the conspiracy theorist is the fact that the rocket would have had to have been so huge to successfully get a man to the moon. And that's why the Russians were constantly working on bigger, bulked up versions of the V2 rocket. And that the fact that the United States went to a more streamlined and efficient Saturn V model, would that rocket could have never got to the moon because Wernher von Braun said that, that you would need a rocket that was so, it'd be an incomprehensibly huge rocket, or the switch from solid fuel to liquid fuel. And these are things that NASA learned as they went through these experiments, and they went away and they pivoted and they said, okay, these mistakes, these aren't working. How can we be more efficient? How can we make a better rocket? Which is something that, you know, the Soviets were ahead, but they never really did.
Oh, no. The Soviets were very good at doing one thing. And that is just kind of going with the same exact thing over and over again. They never experimented, tried new things, or really did any kind of changes to anything.
Well, and, you know, that's interesting you mentioned, because that's the problem, too, with, you know, you mentioned von Braun, who said that we have to have this giant rocket. And then you had John Hobald, who came out with the lunar orbit rendezvous concept. And that's what worked. And it turns out that. And you gotta love Mike Barra. Isn't it interesting that this big top scientist was wrong? You're telling me the big top guy they brought in was wrong, and the almost nobody was the one that won out? Yes. Why is that unbelievable? Why is that inconceivable that the peon came up with an idea that everyone at the top went, oh, holy crap, he's right.
And it's science. And
even von Braun came in. There's the video of him thanking Holton and saying, great job at the launch. And like you just said, Scott, science, what? You know, the scientific model has failure and retries built into it, right?
Right. And if the guy who's low on the totem pole has a better idea, it can be tested and replicated, and then you can move forward with that idea. The conspiracy theorists love to bring up NASA's failures, and they love to tell you NASA's setbacks. What they don't bring up are the multiple images of failed rocket tests by the Soviet program, including a rocket launch test that blew up on the pad with the force of a small atomic weapon. And they don't tell you the story very often of, I believe it's Vladimir Komarov. Died falling to Earth, crashing full speed because his parachute wouldn't open, didn't malfunction. And as he's dying, he was cursing the people who put him inside space in a botched spaceship, and his wife was asking him what to tell the children. So, you know, while the fire on Apollo 1 was terrifying, I think it's probably, at least that was mercifully done quick for the astronauts. Whereas Komarov had a long amount of time to know that he was going to die and allegedly be on the phone to his soon-to-be widow while he's screaming and cursing and swearing at the people who rushed that ship into orbit before it was ready.
You know what? That's an interesting point. How come I never hear these people questioning the Soviet space flight? I never hear them going, Yuri Gagarin was never in space. I never hear that. Never once do I hear them question that. So that one was feasible, but not the NASA one. Because Gus Grissom said, there's some real problems right now. That meant that there's no way they could overcome them. Insurmountable. Oh, but Yuri Gagarin, in the multitude of problems of the Soviet program, oh, yeah, that was totally fine. I believe that. And, you know, too, it's easier to believe that it took a little less time for the Soviets because, one, they did get started a little earlier. But, two, when you have a premier like Stalin saying, get into space now or you die, it's really good motivation when you have congressional subcommittees and, like, the Department of the Navy was allowed to take a shot at rocket engines first. And when you have to deal with a democracy, you kind of have to work through people. When you have one guy with a gun pointed at your head saying, go into space now, well, it tends to streamline the process. Doesn't necessarily make for quality, but it streamlines things.
Yeah, and I think, go ahead, Thomas.
No, I was going to say, absolutely, because quality is different than getting it done. I mean, let's be honest. The Soviets did get into space first. They did a lot of stuff first. But did they do it safely? No, not even close. I mean, sometimes, you mentioned the death of the cosmonauts, any explosions of rockets. Not to mention, you're right, it was just a big souped-up V2 that they built. They never improved on that same idea. They just added more fuel and made it bigger. That's it.
It made it more dangerous.
Yes, by a mile.
And I think, you know, what I look at it as, I liken it to, is a boxing match. The Soviets won the early rounds. And they won the early rounds by doing the comparatively easier things first and took a lot more risk to do it first. And getting a animal into orbit and getting a man into orbit and getting a satellite the size of a beach ball into a stable orbit is far different from sending someone to the moon, landing them on the moon, getting them back on the capsule, and then landing them on Earth. And the United States went slower, but that slower pace at the beginning and the willing to experiment and deviate from the original plan as they learned things and incorporate that into the end game allowed them to win the late stages. And if you want to see how far behind the Soviets actually were on the day that the United States landed on the moon, that same day they crashed their lunar lander into a mountain. They were so far behind, not only couldn't they land someone on the moon, they crashed the remote satellite into a mountain on the moon.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're dealing with feet and miles and stuff, yeah, whatever, close enough.
Yeah, and that's why they crashed it, because they had incorrect telemetry data. It was supposed to be there earlier, but they had to do correction burns to get it to the right landing spot because they were off. And then when they did the final descent, they had incorrect data there, and it ended up, it was still flying full speed when it shouldn't have been into a mountain.
Yeah. It's like, whoops. Yeah. They had that whole planned out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I think conclusively we can say that it is a myth that by 1969, NASA wasn't ready to go to the moon, because they did. Sorry, conspiracy theorists. They did. And it's a myth that they were behind the Soviets, because never again was the United States, I guess you could say the Soviets got Mir up there first, but they put everything they could into that. Never again not really in the ascendancy in that space race.
Yeah, and also, let's be honest, Mir wasn't exactly what I'd call a fantastic space center. It's throughout the years had many, 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 well, it's no longer there, but many flaws as it was going.
Go ahead, Thomas.
It wasn't built to last.
Yeah.
It wasn't built to last.
Yeah, that's why we got the ISS up there now. But,
you know what's interesting too about this, and before we depart from the Soviets, I want to bring up here is, if anybody would have wanted to point out that this was a flaw, that this wasn't real, that this was done in a soundstage, the Soviets would have been the ones. And they had spies in the U.S. They had KGB. So the Soviets acknowledged the moon landing and said, yeah, you beat us. So if you had Australia and other countries, including the ultimate enemy, going, yeah, fine, you did it. Why would they lie on our behalf? Why would they lie on their enemy's behalf?
If anyone was going to scream and yell that we didn't do it, it would have been the Soviet Union in the height of the Cold War. And They were able to actually track what we were doing. If they were just sitting there in low Earth orbit, they would have been screaming it from the rooftops.
Right. So, no, sorry.
The next big conspiracy theory, or the big, shall we say, support for the we didn't land on the moon theory is the Van Allen belts and the solar flares and radiation. The theory here is that the radiation in the Van Allen belts, both the inner and outer Van Allen belt, would have been so significant that it might have killed the astronauts as they traveled through it. And then the other theory is that you would have had solar flares and cosmic radiation that, if the Van Allen belts didn't do the astronauts in, those definitely would have. And that There's no way that Apollo 16 could have survived a large solar flare in 1972. Who wants to start debunking this one?
I'll take it.
All right.
For one, there's definitely overestimation of the lethality of the radiation in the Allen Belt. Also, they went through a thinner spot in the Van Allen Belt. Their exposure time was extremely short. I mean, I think they got the radiation levels of a CAT scan, basically. And the solar radiation, they had most of it blocked. I mean, the ones you really have to worry about is like a gamma ray burst. Well, if that's happening, forget about the astronauts. We're all dead.
Yeah.
That type of radiation, it doesn't really matter at that point. But it's like, no, we had contingencies. I mean, if there was a solar flare, they turned the ship towards the solar flare and blocked it with the mass of the ship. There were plans for things like that. And, I mean, there was radiation that you can block with a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
I mean, literally. Radiation is not the be-all, end-all, kill-instantly thing. I mean, if you're afraid of radiation, don't ever go in a plane.
Or don't go outside your house, for that matter, on a sunny day.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can walk in some parts of the United States and the background ground radiation's higher. And it's because uranium in the ground. I mean, come on.
It's not – a trip from the Earth to the Moon is not something that you want to do 5 or 10 times in a year. But if you do it once, you're going to be okay. Because first, they did plot the trajectory for the orbital transfer to take the astronauts through the less dense areas of the Van Allen belts. The second thing is they went through them really fast. They got through the inner belt, which is the more dangerous one, in a matter of minutes, and the outer belt in about an hour and a half. You can compare it a couple ways. Thomas said it's a CAT scan. That's about right. Phil Platt from Bad Astronomer said they received the average dose of it would be about equivalent to what you would get from living at sea level for a total of 3 years. Now, granted, you got that within 2 hours, but, you know, it's still nothing that's going to kill you. And they say that the total radiation received on the trip out and the trip back was about the same that a nuclear facility worker is allowed to have themselves exposed to in a year. So as long as these guys didn't come home and have CAT scans or go work around a reactor or plutonium or uranium, they were going to be okay from this. You know, they probably got their yearly dose of radiation that their body can handle. And those guys didn't, you know, I mean, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. Buzz Aldrin is still alive, correct?
I think so.
I believe Buzz is still alive. If he's not, he was very recently, a couple of years ago, when he punched that conspiracy theorist in the face.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, who tried to. Well, that was an interesting thing because that theorist was like, swear on the Bible that you did it. And he didn't do it for one reason, because then the guy would just change the benchmark and say, or he would change the question or something else. So
I guess a conspiracy theorist would say the fact that Buzz is still alive proves that they didn't go through the dangerous Van Allen belt. But yeah.
Well, and the rest of them didn't. I mean, Neil Armstrong lived a good long life.
And as far as the solar flare for Apollo 16, the solar flare was in August, and it had the solar flare occurred after Apollo 16 returned to Earth and before Apollo 17. So the fact that solar flare occurred, but the Apollo program was not in space at that time; it was grounded.
And again, they had a contingency for if that did happen. Yep. While in space.
Yep. It's not a good thing. It was a risk, and that's the reason they rotated the crews, and you didn't just keep sending Neil and Buzz up over and over and over again.
I mean, well, yeah, and again, I've had X-rays taken. I mean, that's a dose of radiation.
Right. By the way, Michael Collins died in 89 years. They are all dying at a good old age.
I mean, that proves they didn't go through the Van Allen belt, Ragemaster.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, because they were in orbit. Excuse me. Sorry.
They were in low Earth orbit. Neil lived to be 82 years old. So, I mean, yeah. So, you know, I believe that the damage of the Van Allen belt is significantly overstated, as was the threat of the radiation. I mean, you know, we'd want to send people up if they were going to be in, you know, in outer space beyond the magnetic field, in better insulated ships or shuttles. But for what they did, the length of the trip and the time, they were sufficiently protected by the shielding and the, you know, the aluminum that they had in the Apollo craft. The final combination, you know, the big thing, you know, the conspiracy theorists will say it's in the shadows or it's waving in the wind. The answer, my friend, is waving in the wind. So we get to the photographic evidence, a flag that appears to wave in the moon. And, you know, let's just start tearing through this stuff. Where do we want to start, guys?
Well, first, let me say this part was the most annoying in that 3-hour special you sent us, because those people, one of whom looks like he dropped off the end of the missing link on Darwin's evolutionary chart, said they just would not shut up about the most minor, insignificant detail, a thumb smudge or whatever. It reminds me, Scott, of when you did your Kennedy assassination quick rant. And Sickies, if you haven't heard that, go to Quick Rants. Go to Quick Rants anyway, but go to Quick Rants and look for the Kennedy assassination one. It's not quick. It's about 30 minutes, but it's worth a listen. It's one of my favorites. And in there, Scott talks about photographic evidence that people do. And he talks how they take these blurry, pixelated photos with a smudge, colorize it a certain way that I want it to look, and say, oh, look, it's a police officer shooting a gun. That must be that Corsican hitman.
Lucien Sarti.
And if you do take that hyper-enhanced speculative color smudge, it kind of does, I guess. But, and that's what these people do. They're taking photos and circling the fact that there's a smudge going, well, as you could see, that's clearly the Earth. Or there's a sea in the rock because that's where the that's where the prop would go. Yes, they were dumb enough to put a sea on the ground. A rock that didn't matter where it went needed to have a sea point. Come on, guys. How do I know you didn't put it there? It just, it's nonsense when you consider, and I'll let you guys go over any nitty gritty, but when you consider that the whole argument that, well, first of all, it was done in a studio. Because like the shadows, they shadows parallel. Okay, true. They parallel, or no, they don't. Excuse me. They go perpendicular. They separate in terra firma. On the moon, where the sun is coming at you from a different angle, they run parallel. And one of the things Thomas brought up yesterday, before we got cut off, was that light is a very unpredictable thing. And our best computer technology cannot accurately predict where it is, because who knows where light and shadow is going to fall. So the idea is to get the shadows to run parallel or anything else like on the moon, you would have had to have had lasers, laser beams, but not just any laser. You couldn't have red lasers. You'd have to have multicolored ones. You'd have to have a million of them. So basically, given the technological limitations of the day, you would have to develop the laser technology, and it would have cost more and taken more time, to the point that, you know what, it's just cheaper and easier to actually just go to the moon than to try to figure out how to make the moon effect. And so,
yeah, so we can start unpacking this.
That's my piece.
We can start unpacking this. Let's start with the C-shaped objects. You know, you can see a rock with a C in it, and that's the most commonly pointed to one. It only shows up in later generation reproductions of the photo. It is not present in the original film. So they believe that what that is in a copy, an imperfection like a small coiled hair that showed up in the copy and is thus now in the reproduced prints. And that's what happens with a lot of these. One of the big arguments is that the Hasselblad camera had a reticle in it that was etched into the glass, and therefore it could only appear in front of an object. and the object itself could never appear behind that and obscure it. And then you'll get the conspiracy theorists who will show these photos where that reticle seems to disappear and be placed behind the object. But you can tell they're not photographic experts because they, again, only appear in the copied and scanned photos. And it is an overexposure bleed where the white or very bright areas of the photo in the exposure bleed over the thin, dark crosshairs. And that's why you only see these in later reproductions. And if you look at any of these cases where the reticle disappears, it's blurring in behind a bright white object. And it only happens in a reproduction. Thomas, you have anything to add in that area? I know you're the photographic expert on the show, you know, compared to us. I think one of the things they also say is, why are there no stars in the background?
That's an easy one. That's an easy one to debunk because, for one, the moon is a very reflective surface. So because it's a reflective surface, it's basically going to give you light pollution. Like standing in the middle of the city and trying to find stars. Good luck. Or standing under a street light, even better example. You stand under a street light and you try to look up at the night sky, it's going to be really hard to see the stars. The other thing being, you're trying to take photos of the people on the moon. You're not trying to take photos of the stars. So your exposure time is going to be extremely brief because of how much light is being reflected and how much light is there. So you're going to take a very quick photo. The shutter's going to open. It's going to close. If I on Earth want to take a photo of the stars, I have to A, get away from light pollution, and B, I have to take a camera and point it at the sky and then take a very long exposure shot, which means I basically have to keep the lens open for a long period of time before the stars and all the stars start showing up. Why would you take a camera to the moon and try to take photos with a long exposure? You wouldn't.
No, especially when what you're trying to get is the astronauts and the moon.
Yeah. And if you do it that way, it's going to be terrible. You're all going to have a giant shiny blur and maybe one or two stars will show up.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that they took him to that photographic expert in the science show, Mike Barra. And the guy pointed this out and said, well, there you can see the stars, but as you can see, everything else is looking terrible. So, and then when they did the recreation, the one guy pointed out the moon actually absorbed a lot of light. But the problem is the light reflected by the moon surface, the light reflected by the lunar lander, and the light reflected by the guy holding the camera did a lot of reflect, made the astronauts bright.
Yeah. Also shows why the shadows are. It's the same thing. Light is being reflected, refracted. And I mean, even an object's shape can cause it to look like it's going in a different direction. Or if you go on a mountain or a hill or something, it will look different. It's like the terrain can change how shadows go. Shadows are a terrible way of finding a direction of light.
You can get an idea, yes,
but it's a terrible one. I mean, sundials even have issues sometimes.
Yeah.
Right.
That's just the lunar surface is not like Earth and the shadows behave differently. The light reflects differently. That is why, you know, people always say, well, this photo looks like you have multiple light sources. Because you do.
Yeah.
You do.
That's what bugged me, the way they went on and on and on about this stuff. It's like, you guys keep making the mistake that you're on terra firma. Screwing it up, and you're looking for every little slight, oh, look at that line. It's a little off. It reminds me of a Kennedy assassination documentary I saw as a kid where they were circling pictures of Kennedy's hairs on his head to prove that a bullet came in this way. And the whole time, my family and I are just looking at it going, what are they talking about?
Well, yeah, and here's a big one. No one even really thinks of this. On the moon, you don't just have the sun giving you light. just like how the moon reflects light to Earth, Earth reflects light to the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So That's why it's so bright at night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have light from the sun, you have light from Earth, you have light from the lander, you have light from the astronauts, you have light from the lunar surface, and the dust is scattering all of it, and you probably have some ambient light coming from Mars or from Venus at that point, too. I mean, I don't know for sure, but you have multiple light sources going on in space. And one of the things you said was, you know, we're talking about the photos. One of the original photos of Buzz Aldrin, is you know, cited as an example of the hot spots, which reflect a fill-in light or a spotlight, because it tends to you see overexposed areas, not in the original photographs. Many of the problems with the photographic evidence that the conspiracy theorists point to might be valid if they showed up in the original photos. They end up showing up in the copies because it's a copy of a copy. And in some of these, everybody can do their own exposure of that copy and they tweak the contrast. And that starts to make it look like there's a hot spot. When you go back to the original unedited photos that NASA took, or that Neil Armstrong took of Buzz Aldrin, because apparently Buzz was terrible with the camera, because everything we have is a Buzz. It doesn't exist. The hot spots don't exist. The fill-in lights don't exist. The reticle errors don't exist. Those photos check out under examination.
Well, not just that, but like when they point out spotlights, they love to point the flag for that one. They're like, the flag is lit up from both sides. It's fabric, dude. Fabric lets light through.
You know, I love the last thing on the photos. Is people say, how are these photos so good? How do we have so many of these photos and how are they such high quality?
Because we don't see the bad ones.
Yeah. Yeah. They took hundreds of them, thousands of them with a wide angle lens and they practiced on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Scott, since we're talking about lenses here, there's also the point of, how come we can't see the equipment that's left on the moon? Well, and I love how the show pointed out that, well, if you wanted to see the stuff on the moon, you would be using a telescope, let's say at the Naval Observatory, one of the best in the world. Using that telescope, you're basically trying to find an SUV in New England by looking at a satellite image of New England. And then using the Hubble telescope is not much better. And I like how that Berkeley professor came in and said, well, basically, if you wanted to see anything like that, it would be hard, but you would at least need a lens the size of a football field. And that even then wouldn't do it. And then they pointed out the lunar orbiter satellite that did get pictures of it.
Yeah.
Well, and then, of course, don't forget the reflective surfaces they put on the moon, that if I really had the ability and wherewithal and equipment, I could shoot a laser at it and it'd bounce back within a minute or two.
Yeah. Well, less than a minute.
It bounced back in a short amount of time.
Yeah, that's how we get the most accurate distance to the moon, is because they left mirrors on the surface. But yeah, you have photos of what I think 5 out of the 6 flags from the surface. It's like we have photos showing the stuff still there on the surface.
Right.
Like, come on, people. And I think the last really big one is the flag they point to.
Oh, yes. My gosh, yeah. Why is that bendy? Well, you see, the flag was on a telescoping pole that jammed up. And they were trying to jam it into hard-packed rock. And they got it in there. But, of course, that means bending things. And, Sickies, if you're like me and you've ever tried to put, like, a hollow aluminum pole or plastic one into your lawn, like a lawn sign, you will bend it. Because if you're like me and you have bad pressure sensitivity and force sensitivity to know how much force to use, you're going to bend it. Especially if it kinks up or something. which is what happened on the moon.
Yeah.
Well, here's something else you can do. The flag appears to be waving, but you can actually take the photos of Buzz Aldrin saluting, then not saluting, and then his slight turn as he walks away. And you can see that the flag doesn't move one inch.
Yeah,
he as you put those photos together.
Yeah, he also walks right by the flag and doesn't move it because there's no wind, no air movement.
Right.
The only time it's moving is A, when they've just finished touching it or they're putting it into the ground. That's it. It's not moving any other times.
So, guys, I'm kind of glad now that I had an extra day to look at this podcast because I've come up with another conspiracy.
Oh, boy.
And this is going to lead to a Rage Master rant, honestly.
Oh, boy.
Well, let me close the window in my room.
So if you do a quick Google search for Mike Barra and the title Who Mourns for Apollo, you will find out that in 2008, on his blog, he wrote about why the moon landing hoax is a crock of crap. And he wrote a scientific paper that you can still find entitled Who Mourns for Apollo, where he debunks the entire moon landing conspiracy. So I've just lost respect for the Science Channel. I've lost respect for the documentary that we watched because Mike Barra was paid to come on the air and do his act that he actually believed in this conspiracy. And that actually probably means that Mike Barra himself is a complete fraud and he knows that he's manipulating idiots with all of his conspiracy theories.
Wait, hang on. One quick check. Is it because he changed his mind? Because in the show, I mean, yeah, it looks scripted, but is it possible that he actually just eventually had a change of heart?
The show was done in 2018.
And when was the paper done?
Well, 2008 is when the blog was done, and the paper is done before that. I'm going to pull this one up here. Who Mourns for Apollo, studyphysics.ca. Well, and it's by Mike Barra. With Steve Troy and Richard Hoagland. Who Mourns for Apollo? Yeah. Was it really a paper moon? I don't see a date on this. But it is a long, semi-scholarly, looks like a college paper maybe, where he says that most of these charges are pretty dumb, but this one really has to take the cake. That's how he writes off. Just getting rid of these. I mean, I don't have a date for when this was submitted, but the best debunker of the We Never Landed on the Moon conspiracy is none other than Mike Barra.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to Google his name real quick and make sure that, like...
So let me just make this clear. There's two possibilities here. One, that the Science Channel basically got him on board to basically spout some BS that...
Or they backed the dump truck full of money up to my house.
Or that he changed his mind from the time he wrote this paper in the blog to when they filmed it, and he changed from it's a conspiracy theory to it's real. Which would make no sense, in my opinion, but okay.
Look, if he changed his mind on this... It was a hardcore change of mind because, I mean, he is well, really in the snippets of this that I'm reading. Was it really only a paper moon or who mourns for Apollo? He's pretty harsh. It starts off with, in the last few years, we become increasingly alarmed as a particularly silly and damaging urban myth has begun to take hold. Promoted by a few well-known authors such as David Percy and the late James Collier, this latest twist on the current conspiracy nation fad is based on a simple, if unbelievably naive and absurd notion that the Apollo missions and subsequent moon landings were faked.
Okay, that's a bit of a turn.
Well, Oh, they scripted it.
Mike Barra.
I wonder why he caved so fast.
Yes, he was on there to be beaten up and to play the role of the stupid idiot because it's what he does. He is not a conspiracy guy.
He played the role well.
And that means he on Ancient Aliens, he's probably playing the role. And you know what? Oh, I gotta give, I almost gotta give credit to Mike Barra because he said there's a bunch of idiots out there who will believe anything that people tell them because they're stupid, and I'm gonna make money off these morons.
Yep. And he did.
I don't respect him at all. Because he is furthering. Because how many people see that paper you just brought up, Scott? Nobody. Very few people. Everyone else, however, sees the conspiracy theory because it's sexier. So he, for his own personal wealth, is contributing to the dumbening of society and lies. What a piece of crap.
Yep. Scott, you're right.
Unbelievable.
2020.
No, really? I mean,
the dawning of the age of the dumbening.
You know what? Here's a conspiracy theory. How many people who are conspiracy theorists are just doing it for the money?
All of them. Except Jesse Ventura. He believes.
When you look at like Epoch Times, they're my new worthy of my ire. That has their charts about Obamagate, where the janitor who scrubbed the White House toilets was in on it somehow. And all that other nonsense. Those kind of people, how much are they doing that for the money? I mean, but now we know for sure, Mike Barra, if you are furthering lies, conspiracy theories, and that's what they are, lies, here's why that's a sickening disease. It's not even just for the particular conspiracy. That's just a symptom of the problem. The problem is the attitude that comes with it. The attitude that leads to science denial. I had a talk with a guy this morning who was going over all this. Of course, he was complaining about COVID, but he mentioned that all of a sudden there was some kind of like, there's an agenda. There's an agenda. And I said, oh, yeah, what's your proof of that? And he went, well, you see, I just want to be careful. If it looks like a duck, it sounds like a duck, it's a duck. And I said, yeah, you know what? Well, here's a rebuttal. If you don't have any evidence, you're looking at the duck from 100 yards away going, well, I guess it kind of looks like a duck. And I've decided it's a duck. Therefore, I'm right. You know what? Here's my point.
It was a pigeon.
Now. From now on, this is my philosophy. Okay. You want to check doctors. You want to not believe scientists and experts. What's your trade? Oh, you're a mechanic. I don't believe anything you do because I have an opinion. And I was once screwed over by a mechanic. So therefore, my opinion's always right. That's it. We're doing even scales here, conspiracy theorists. You want to throw shade and doubt everybody? You want to throw this garbage, just nonsense about this is what I think, therefore it's right. I'm going to do it to you. Whatever your job is, I'm allowed to question it and call you a liar. Do you know why? I have an opinion, and I am right. And that's the problem I now have with Mike Barra, because he's making money off of that infection of society.
Yes, but that's nothing, Rage Master, because you have a gambling problem.
No, that's you, actually.
I like your idea, though. I do like your concept of I'm going to go to a mechanic with my own advice. I'm going to call my car dealer and the manufacturer and let them know that I believe that the fact that I have to use gasoline and oil in my car is a myth. And that based on my opinion, I can fill it up with kerosene, and that instead of oil, I can use liquid butter.
Yep.
And if my engine blows up, they have to replace it.
I read it on an internet site that OPEC knows that, but they're keeping it hidden so they could get my money. So, yeah, it's exactly right. Why can't I do it to those people? All right, you want to question doctors? All right, the NASA engineer that designed all that is lying? Okay, fine. What about you? What do you do that I am allowed to question? Well, let's see here. Oh, it's not so nice when I can just do baseless accusation.
I'm going to buy a DeLorean.
How about I just start saying, you're cheating on your wife? I don't know that, but you have the face of a cheater.
I'm going to buy a DeLorean and open the doors and drive it off a cliff. And when it doesn't fly, I'm going to have my estate sue the defunct DeLorean Motor Company.
Because it didn't fly.
And I've seen on TV that it flies. I'm also going to sue Robert Zemeckis because it was my opinion that that was a truthful depiction of the DeLorean's capabilities.
Yep. And that's the problem. That's what it comes down to.
I'm not really going to sue Robert Zemeckis.
I am right, and everybody and reality should bend to me. And I'm so tired of this hidden agenda nonsense and deep state bullcrap. Knock it off. If you got the concrete proof, let's see it. And it better not be a chart 50 people deep. Because if it is, I'm using it for toilet paper.
All right. Before they shut us down again with a technological glitch and we lose all of this again and the new stuff, which is better than yesterday's, let's rate this thing on a scale of one, on a scale of 0 to 10 for believability, and then a scale of 0 to 10 for the fun that we had investigating this conspiracy and debunking it. I will start.
What are we going to do? Is it going to be lunar landers or like?
Yeah, lunar landers.
Okay.
So I am going to give the believability of the conspiracy 0 lunar landers. And that is less than I gave the possibility that Bigfoot is a transdimensional alien. We 100% fact landed on the moon in 1969, and we continued to land on the moon. And I know that because the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter and orbiters from other nation space agencies can show us the photos of the crap we left on the moon. I also know it because it checks out 100%, and Mike Parra has done a fantastic job of debunking his own conspiracy. 0 out of 10. For the fun that I had with this one, 6 out of 10. It's not as fun. It's not as fun as investigating the idiocy that Bigfoot is a transdimensional alien. And it actually hurts my soul that there are people stupid enough to still believe this, and that there are people who would rather believe that it was faked than in the ingenuity of humankind during a time of war when our efforts are being used to kill people more efficiently and in larger numbers, that we could earmark the insane amount of resources that we did to go to the moon that we can't even get close to getting for NASA at this point. And that we were able to accomplish something and turn these deadly weapons of destruction into something that advanced all of humankind and show that when we are unified and focused, nothing, even the stars and men walking on the moon, and hopefully, you know, in a more enlightened society, men and women walking on the moon, is able to be accomplished. It is something that we all need. And so, you know what? The fun of this actually goes down to a 0 as well, because it's not fun. It's 0 lunar landers for both. It's just agitating, a sign of the times of the, as Ragemaster said, the dawning of the dumbening of America. And so that's it for me. Who's next?
I'll go. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Tom. You got it.
Okay.
I'll be quick.
Oh, mine's going to be quick too. Believability is also 0. It happened. There was no big conspiracy theory. There's not even a chance. I mean, come on. I guess I gave the other one negative, but whatever. Okay. Now, for how much fun? I'm going to give it a 3.14159265435. Yes, I'm giving it pie.
Apple pie.
Excellent.
Because, yep. I'm sorry, I had some fun, but you're right, it was aggravating. I can't give it a bunch, but it was at least somewhat entertaining to debunk this stupidity that I can't believe is still believed by some people.
All right. I 0 myself for believability, for everything mentioned. I'm going to give it a 2 or 3 for fun, because the beginning half, that 3-hour one that I couldn't even make it through, watching those troglodytes of humanity plow through with their infectious, disgusting, sickening, lying filth trash, and going and having the gall to say more intelligent and rational people are accepting this. No, intelligent, rational people are deriding you horrendously and you deserve it. But however, the part I enjoyed was watching the debunking videos. So that's where the fun came in. I told you I couldn't even finish the first one, Scott. And it wasn't the, had it been an hour, I could have made it through. But when the photo part was coming to a close and I realized, my God, there's still how much time? Done.
Yeah, I didn't get through it. I tried to watch it three times. I couldn't get through it.
Yeah.
It was I would rather watch a Jane Austen film.
Ooh. All right, guys, I'm going to get us out of here before they shut us down. Strap in, because we go to even less believability, if possible, less than zero next week when we return to the moon, because the same people who said we didn't go to the moon are now saying, oh, we went to the moon, but the aliens who have a moon base there told us that we can't come back. And we're going to talk about the mythical Apollo 18, 19, and 20 missions. And yeah, we went to the moon, but the aliens told us not to come back or else. Someone else is on the moon, people. Someone else is on the moon.
Space Nazis, if you've ever seen Iron Sky.
If you have comments for us, you can leave them at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. That's ravinglunaticmedia.com. That's ravinglunaticmedia.com. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. As always, thank you for listening. Mike Barra, you have no credibility, and I find you to be repulsive. Rage Master, what's left for them to do?
Stay sick, sickies, and believe we landed on the moon.